Welcome to Women Worth Knowing, the radio program and podcast hosted by Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.
If you're tuning in and you're listening, it's probably because you have been entranced with the story of Maude Kells that I'm talking about, and I'm joined in studio by Mary Perro, a friend of Robin Jones Gunn, and myself. And Mary is a speaker, she's a worship leader, and she's an author. So we just thought she was the perfect person when Robin couldn't be here, or maybe when I can't be here, she's willing to step in. And I am so thankful you're here. Do you want to catch us up to where we are with Maude Kells?
Absolutely. Well, thank you for having me. And we are talking about Maude Kells today, who has a fascinating life story. She's Irish and grew up in Northern Ireland, went to nursing school, and she has gone through so many different setbacks to follow her heart's desire to serve the Lord in what was formerly known as the Congo, is now Zaire.
Right.
And she's just left. We just left off in the last episode. She had been serving for a number of years in a hospital there, which, you know, they had some things, they'd updated some things, and now she's taken another step to kind of go far out into a very remote place called Melita, where she is serving the people there.
And she is. And remember, she's serving, again, like we said, in primitive conditions. She doesn't have a stove. She has a solar panel. And that's what she uses mainly for her radio operations, to be able to
probably stay in touch with the other hospital,
exactly,
or other missionaries,
and
or the pilots.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, that's exactly right.
I remember this from reading all about Elizabeth Elliot and Nate Saint.
Yes.
It was one of my favorite stories.
Exactly.
So fascinating.
How interesting, because, you know, there's no way to get electricity out there. There's generators, but she said getting gasoline even is difficult. So she would run everything by her solar panel, which I think is just amazing, because this is when solar was just kind of coming into its own.
It feels very ahead of its time, doesn't it?
It does, doesn't it? So her greatest hardship at this time, you know, she said, was not like not the mud huts, not the lack of electricity, not even, you know, the primitive dwelling, but it was being without a car.
Oh, you know, I thought you were going to say the strawberry jam that she lost in the first episode.
No, it was trying to get to these outlying villages,
yes,
and help these women without a car. And even when the planes would fly in and bring her medical equipment, you know, like forceps and, you know, stethoscopes and those equipment, she had to like make multiple trips, either walking or by bicycle. So she really, really needed a car. Well, her precious Presbyterian Molesworth Church back in Ireland raised enough money to buy her another Land Rover. And so she was called to go to a conference in Nabongo, and she said she drove it safely back to Melita.
Yeah, she was very careful after what had happened last time.
Exactly. And with that Land Rover, she was able to take medical aid to the little villages around Melita. You know, when we talk about this, though, it was, you know, she's going to travel some distance of, I think it was 400 kilometers, which is, you know, quite a distance from Nabongo all the way to Melita. And it's primitive. By this time, the infrastructure, the roads have potholes, and she's going up sides of cliff where part of the road is just gone. And, you know, she's just having to drive very carefully. And as we talked about before, she's crossing these rivers that have logs for bridges stretched across. And this is, you know, so when we say, oh, and she drove back to Melita.
Yeah.
It's no small task.
Sounds easier than it was. When we had talked in the earlier episode about so many changes in the government and the country, they actually did have a lot of roads and infrastructure, but that had actually been bombed over time.
That's right.
And destroyed. So it's...
That's right.
Just
and disintegrated.
Having a car is wonderful, but it's still very difficult travel.
It is. And, you know, again, it had to be a Land Rover because she needs the four-wheel drive.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of the time she's not going over roads, especially when she's going to these outlying villages, which is another thing that she would do, is she would go all by herself and set up these clinics. So she realizes pretty soon on she needs to train up a medical team. So she's able to get Helen Rosevere's manual and start training people. But the other thing that she was really concerned about is, again, these women are giving birth and she's doing these operations and these surgeries in these mud huts that don't have proper ventilation, and they're dirty, you know, and the vermin is able to get in. So she tells the people, we have got to build proper hospitals. So the whole village pitches in. The women go and they collect rocks every place they can to help with the foundation. MAF flies in some cement. And so they're able to pour this foundation. And then the people said, oh, we have two brick making machines and they can make two bricks at a time. And it takes a full, it takes a day just to form the bricks, to fire them up. And then they have to sit out and they have to cool and get hard. And so the people themselves helped her build the hospital.
Brick by brick.
Exactly. Brick by brick. When one of the young men who was treated at the hospital couldn't pay his bill, Ma conscripted him into helping build the hospital as a payment. Well, the young man turned out to be one of the most skilled builders and worked steadily with Maud for the rest of his life in all the building projects.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
That's like another story of something that you didn't want to happen. You know, you go to the hospital and you can't afford it, but the Lord actually had a divine appointment there.
Exactly. And he didn't even know how skilled he was till he started building, and he just had a propensity for it. The only thing that dismayed Maud at this point was the rat population and unexpected visitations to her house. And she prayed, God, either deliver me from my huge phobia of rats or deal with these rats. And he did both. So Maud not only met the medical needs of Melita, she not only trained up nurses, both men and women, and taught them hygiene and how to take care. She evangelized and supported the Congolese pastor and the teachers at the Bible college. She even taught a class on the Old Testament for the students. She loved it. Monday through Friday, Maud was up early for morning devotions, 5 a.m., and then straight to work. Sundays were all about church, Bible study, prayer, and a shared meal. She actually would invite the people over to her house to share a meal. And as I had mentioned in a previous episode, she had fruit trees that surrounded her. And the hospital was actually a little compound, and her house was on this compound, not too far from the hospital. And she had a banana tree. Oh, I had said they couldn't grow guavas. She did have a guava tree, grapefruit, avocados, and lemons. I can't remember what the fruit was that she couldn't grow because she was disappointed. I think it might have been mangoes. But anyway, Saturdays, again, were a shared meal and a time of sharing together. In God's grace, Maud was able to go beyond herself in training and meeting the medical needs of the people of Melita. She felt the Lord helping her to do surgery, to stitch, to deliver, to even do C-sections at times when it was needed to help these mothers with their breech.
Yeah, she's definitely being equipped by the Lord to do
It's crazy.
What was needed.
Mm-hmm. So in 1989, she's 50 years old now. So remember, she went back sometime in her 30s, when she was in her 30s. Now she's 50. Maud was due for a break. Can you imagine?
Yeah, I would think so.
So before leaving, she sought to finish as many projects as possible. When she finally took her well-deserved time off, now she's not going back to Ireland at this time. She's just taking a break. She went to spend it with Dr. Helen Rosevere, who by this time had retired, moved to Ireland, but had come back to work with BBC to do a documentary on her life. So after filming, they traveled to Nairobi together. In 1990, Maud returned to Melita, and because of the pregnant women that were traveling distances of 30 to 40 miles to have their babies at the hospital in Melita, Maud felt the pressing need of building a better maternity ward for the hospital. And up until that time, the hospital was brick, but the maternity part was still a mud building. One afternoon, Maud had rushed off to the maternity hospital to help with an emergency, and in the rush, forgot to lock her door. But, you know, they had a guard on the compound, so she felt pretty secure because it was a compound. However, returning home late that night, she went straight to bed. In the middle of the night, she sensed some movement in her little hut, her little house. And so she got up and she walked out, and there was a man who was drunk and high on drugs in her living area. And she said, you know, what are you doing here? And the man grabbed her arm and started moving her towards the bedroom and said, ah, my wife, we must go to bed. Maud offered a quick prayer and then said, quick thinking, and it's definitely the Lord, yes, that's fine. Oh, but can we get some fresh air first? And she headed toward the door. The man followed, and as soon as Maud stepped outside, she began to call for the guard. The guard was right there with a light, and he had heard a noise and had already come. And so he apprehended the would-be rapist. Later, the man repented. He was caught and he repented and admitted he had been high on drugs. And he even received the Lord and became a respected leader in the church.
Oh, my goodness.
However, she said she just couldn't take it.
She didn't
have fellowship with that guy. In 1990, Maud was joined by a German missionary named Roswitha. And Roswitha Mann took oversight of the leprosy colony. On a side note, Roswitha found a baby chimpanzee that she adopted and raised as a pet.
Oh, my.
Isn't that kind of cute? But they loved working together. She felt like it was just so good to have somebody else that lived with her, that understood her, and great friends. In 1991, because of the deteriorating conditions in Zaire, the people began revolting. They were hungry.
Mm.
And violence broke out at such a dangerous level that the missionaries were being recalled and told to leave the country. The fighting even reached within miles of Melita, and Roswitha and Maud were forced to fly to Rwanda. After 10 days, the situation seemed to calm down with a new government, and Maud was able to convince some MAF helicopter pilots to fly her back to Melita. The pilot said, we don't know where Melita is. And she said, I'll guide you.
From the air.
From the air. So she's looking for markers and she's praying the whole time. And she's like, Lord, I don't know how to navigate. But she found the river that was close to Melita and she was able to guide them to the airport. However, within a few weeks, and what we're going to get is just the turnover and the dangers. So not only is she living in primitive conditions, but she's living in very dangerous conditions. Within weeks of returning, the situation again grew very dangerous. And the newly appointed president of Zaire was deposed.
Mm.
The BBC itself asked all the British citizens living in Zaire to please evacuate.
Oh, my.
So she had to again evacuate. 6 months later, the situation again seemed to stabilize, and Maud returned to find that everything she had left was still intact and running well. On New Year's Day, 1994, the new surgical ward of the hospital was opened. However, again, the country was sinking lower and lower into poverty and desperation. And by this time, most of the roads were undrivable. Nobody could reach Melita except for by plane. Also, dysentery ravaged the country, and Melita was not immune. Usually, they had the right medical supplies to stop something like this. But because of all the marauding, the medicines had been stolen, and there was nothing with which to treat the people.
And even the roads being destroyed.
Being closed, exactly.
And so much more dangerous being, I would think, in a remote area where if people come to you, you're all they have.
Exactly. And one of the saddest things for Maud personally was that the Bible school director, who, you know, was Congolese, that he succumbed to the dysentery and died.
Mm, how tragic.
So the best Maud could do was provide soap and water, and add every hospital entrance with another latrine. So when I say latrine, we're not talking about a toilet. We're talking about like a mud hut with a hole in it.
An outhouse.
An outhouse. And I mean, that's how she lived. That's what she had, too. She didn't have flushing toilets or anything sophisticated, and she lived like that.
And how terrible to, like, see people dying of something you know is curable.
Preventable.
You know you can help.
Right.
But without the ability to do so because you don't have the supplies.
No supplies. In 1995, this is in July, she's 56 years old, and the economy of Zaire collapsed, and soldiers no longer received a salary. So what they did is they formed these marauding gangs, and they would go around to different villages and begin to harass the people. So soldiers passing through Melita stripped two of the hospital's workmen, taking their clothes, and then beat them. Maud was able to intervene and just barely save their lives.
Oh, my.
They got upset with Maud, and they began to fire their guns up in the air if she didn't leave them alone. I mean, it was so dangerous. In 1996, the unrest continued. An eye doctor visiting Melita, and people came People came in droves to have their eyes mended. So he flew in, and he's serving. You know, they would do that. Doctors would come in every 3 months or so and serve at the hospital. And when he came, he brought a case of Coca-Cola, which was a huge treat on the mission field, right? And seeing how tired and worn he was becoming, because he was doing a patient after patient, Maud volunteered to get him a Coke with ice. However, after she had gotten him the refreshing drink, she decided to bring it back on her bicycle. She's 56. She's riding her bicycle with one hand and an ice Coke in the other. And she crashes and she falls off her bike and she breaks her wrist. So Dr. Ugedi had to stop in the middle of one of his operations and set Maud's arm in a plaster.
Oh, no.
After he left, soldiers invaded Melita and they carried off any valuables they could find, including the medical equipment. If anyone objected, they were beaten. An army colonel was sent from a place called Kindu to restore peace to the province. And for a time, the people were able to return. Now, every time there was unrest in Melita, the people had to go into the forest nearby or the jungle and hide. That was all they could do, was to hide with their children. They buried anything that was of worth because otherwise it would be stolen. In 1997, though Maud had hoped to return before July, the unrest prevented her from doing so. In July, she also had another missionary, Maisie Smith, who decided to go back to Zaire and see if it would be safe to return. When they arrived, she found out that her Land Rover had been commandeered by the new government. She went to officials, again, demanding it back. Now, she's in Nambongo at this time. She's not even Melita, and she's seen her Land Rover being driven around by these different soldiers. So she wanted to take it back to Melita, but she couldn't. They wouldn't give it back to her. And they kept saying, oh, we will give it back to you. Just wait. Just be patient. And they never did. In fact, she found out later that they hid it from her, that they drove it off in a different direction. So she found a Land Cruiser type taxi that agreed to take her to Melita for the price of $550, which was a huge amount.
Oh, my.
And her door was held open by string. Remember, I told you it's like 400 kilometers away, you know, roughly about, 300 miles or so. And the radiator cap was a bit of corn cob. And there was also a leak in the oil tank that he had to make frequent stops just to refill it.
Oh, my.
Maud even got sprayed by boiling water from the radiator, but she didn't care. She was desperate to get to her people in Melita, and it took her 3 days to get just within 4 miles of Melita. And he said, I can't go any further. And so there had been a ferry at one point that had crossed this crocodile-infested river, but it was gone. And all that there was a little canoe.
So the bridge is gone.
The bridge is gone. And so she had to make this trek on this little tiny boat. And I read on Instagram that in Africa, over 1,000 people a year are killed by crocodiles.
Oh, my goodness.
Who knew? As Maud crossed the river, she saw a huge crowd of people coming from Melita and the outlying villages, all to welcome her back. They had trumpets blaring, singing, dancing, and the company walked the last 4 miles with her from that river all the way into town. Maud learned that the Christians, while she had been gone, had dug holes in the ground and risked their lives to hide all of her belongings and some of the hospital equipment from the marauding soldiers. That included her solar panel. The hospital was completely out of medicine, so the people were overjoyed to see Maud's new supply. Maud stayed for only 3 days assessing the damages and to see what was needed. And she also saw that the airstrip was fine, and she was able to radio for a plane to pick her up. She planned to get all the supplies needed and return as soon as she could, but she had to go to Ireland first. However, by the time she got to Ireland, she was sick with malaria, and she had also contracted hepatitis from drinking the unfiltered water during her short stay in Melita. And her return was delayed until her liver could recover. So she wants to go back. And this lady, Margaret Coleman, also from Northern Ireland, she's 77 at the time, who had worked in Melita for 25 years, and that was before Maud had gone there, asked Maud if she could go back with her. And Maud was delighted. So Maud's going back with a 77-year-old woman.
Maud is, what, she's in her late 50s now?
In her late 50s, right. And so the Molesworth had a church service dedicating her to the Lord. And Helen Rosevere even shared at that service. And she shared from Exodus 2:9. So once back in the country, in Nabongo, Maud lost no time in securing a pilot and plane to fly them both to Melita. They were met with a rapturous welcome and an official of some sort who tried to impound the plane and not let it leave. Maud argued with this man for 2 hours and finally was able to talk the official into letting the pilot go. The pilot went running into his plane, took off as soon as possible before the man could change his mind. You know, you give one of those little men power and they just try
to take your Land Rover and your plane.
That's right. So immediately Maud was called to the hospital for an emergency, and Maud was able to save the life of a baby and a mother. She was exhausted and ready to return home and begin settling in again. However, she found her luggage all in the front garden surrounded by soldiers, and they insisted that she open all of her contents so they could inspect them and take whatever they wanted out of it. 2 days later, a drunken commander returned to Maud's house to use her shortwave radio. Maud refused and explained that the battery was dead. He muttered some threats and left. She thought that was the end of it, but found out that he was planning on shooting her. Again, the believers of Melita intervened, and they locked him up until he was sober. Later, he was replaced because the people were able to get a message to the superiors, and they took him out. But Maud also at that time learned that her brick hospital was now the housing for soldiers. And everyday innocent people were constantly rounded up by the soldiers and shot or beaten for even perceived slights or imagined offenses. It was in this atmosphere that Maud and Margaret continued to carry on their medical care and service to the people. Again, we're talking about a woman in her late 50s and a woman in her late 70s.
Amazing.
At one point, one of the soldiers pointed an AK-47 right at Maud, and she took the barrel of the gun and said, "Get that thing away from me," and pushed it aside. And the commander just looked amused. So after he was replaced, Maud was able to get back to the hospital and start cleaning it out again and restore what was lost. While she was gone, however, most of the hospital beds and equipment had been stolen, and the bedding had been ruined by the precious people trying to hide it. The roofs leaked, and some of the walls had collapsed. And Maud went about to secure a safe way for Margaret to return to Ireland, and she was able to get the aid of the British Medical Emergency Relief International, called Merlin, to agree to pick up Margaret and get her to an airport, because at this point, the airport was closed in Melita. And she said, "Well, as long as you're coming to Melita to pick up my friend, could you bring some medical equipment?" and they agreed to bring it. So that's part three. We still have more on Maud Kills. You don't want to miss it. It gets really exciting. I'm going to just give a spoiler alert. Maud's going to get shot in part four, and you're going to want to hear about that. So amazing woman.
Thank you for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. For more information on Cheryl, visit CherylBroderson.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. For more information on Robin, visit RobinGunn.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. Join us each week for a lively conversation as we explore the lives of well-known and not-so-well-known historical and contemporary Christian women. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Make sure you rate us on your podcast app, subscribe, and share it with a friend. Thank you again for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.